Well, welcome to a Panthers pre-game podcast. We've got the crew together. We're looking ahead to the weekend action and we'll reflect a bit. I know we've already touched on it, but we'll flex a bit in more detail on that super win over Coventry Blaze. Just Dan Green missing today. He's away at the moment, but delighted to be warned, be joined by Jono Bullard, Ken Feast, and BBC Radio Nottingham's Chris Gadsby, TSGG. Welcome all.
Hi.
Good evening.
Afternoon.
Or afternoon,
evening
or whatever you want,
afternoon,
whichever
depending
it is
where
at this point.
What do you say, Chris?
I said evening or afternoon or whichever one it is at this time in the day.
It's still light. It's afternoon.
It's a debate, isn't it? 5 o'clock, evening, afternoon. Anyway, we could go down rabbit holes we don't need to go down. Let's stop. We'll look ahead in a minute to the weekend. Really exciting game. Cardiff Devils on the road for the Panthers in the Elite League. But let's just touch on the game on Wednesday night. Panthers, of course, needed a regulation time win to guarantee themselves second in an automatic place in the semi-finals. The overtime slash penalty shot win meant that Panthers will now play in the playing game. Going to test Chris Gadsby because he's probably well across it, way more than the rest of us. But obviously, Panthers are in the playing game. We don't know who yet. We don't know whether it's home or away. But Chris, we're going to come to you and I'm sure you're going to be able to give me some percentages about who it's likely to be. So we'll go on to that shortly. But effectively, in a play-in game, it will be a one. It's actually called the elimination game these days. A one-off game. Some people have been asking about it. It's effectively a one-off quarter-final for the two teams to make the other three teams that are in the semi-finals. We know that Coventry and Sheffield from Group A are there. What we don't know is how Group B will pan out. And Glasgow and Dundee and Belfast are all in the running for the spots of one and two. So that will be, no doubt, sort of finalised in the coming weeks. I think the final games aren't until a bit deeper into November. But anyway, we'll go into all of that more very shortly. But Jono, that was a really, really good win because we were facing elimination. Would have been really sad. But, you know, and I guess as we touched on the post-game podcast, we weren't at our best all night, but they found a way, which was impressive.
Yeah, we dug deep for that one. And a couple of messages I got after the game, one from someone I know from the Blaze, said you really dug in for that one. And we did. You know, 41 seconds from time for Ollie to get that equaliser. But, you know, you have to play right to the end, and that's exactly what we did. And, you know, you've got to give credit as well to both netminders on Wednesday night. I thought they were both absolutely superb, Kevin Carr and Matt Robson. Robson especially with that save he made in overtime right at the end. And then there was a big chance for Tim Doherty right at the end as well, and Cooper Zek. But I thought Robson was superb, Carr was superb. And it was just a really edge of your seat, gritty game. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. A proper game of chess, and, you know, nice to get it on with the shootout at the end. Would have been great to win in regulation and make the semis by right, but, you know, you've got to tip your hat to the Blaze. They've done very, very well to make it themselves. And we still got another shot. And I think after four games in the group stages, I think if anyone would have offered us the elimination game, we'd have snapped their arms off.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because it wasn't the most thrilling game until the end. And you're right, it was more of a tactical game. So more of a game for the purist. It wasn't like end-to-end hockey. You know, it wasn't a big scoreline. But obviously, you know, they were two very good sides. And Coventry shut Panthers down on occasions. And I think I mentioned on the post-game podcast, I felt we went from time to when we could barely get in their zone to being all over them and being really unlucky. It was a very strange game. Sometimes the puck just doesn't forge for you all night. Sometimes it continuously does. And I just think that game ebbed and flowed. And Coventry gave us, you know, a really, really good going, you know, going over. But credit to Danny Stewart and Linton Grant. You know, Danny Stewart teams never give up. You can see that mould that the Panthers are playing with. And it was just great. Ken, we'll come on to the you know, because you were so enthused by that late Ollie goal. We'll come on to you in a minute. But Chris Gadsby, you know, what was your take on the game? Do you kind of agree with where we were? Not our best performance, but we found a way, which was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was far from Panthers' best performance, as you've said, but, you know, never say die attitude, play for the full 60 minutes, and Panthers have been able to come away with it. Sort of a weird scenario once it got into overtime. Obviously, Coventry still, as you saw, went out and tried to win the game, but the point was enough for them to secure the semi-finals. So if Panthers had then got the extra point. That was it, Group A done, which is how it ended up working. But it was a, I suppose, a little bit like the that time Great Britain only needed the overtime, and they needed a point, and then you go to overtime, you've got to carry on playing it, but there was absolutely nothing to gain or lose from Coventry in that extra 5 minutes. You know, it was, well, they've got the point, they're guaranteed to finish second, they're in the semi-finals, but they'll still try and win. And you know, Panthers had to play hard and play for the entire game. I thought they did well, particularly after going behind early on, to not let the heads drop and to fight hard for it, and have got into that play-in game.
Ken, you were so enthused, I could tell after the game, with that late Ollie Betteridge goal. And it just was brilliant. You know, we talked about how the 6-on-5 ploy rarely works. It's just the nature of hockey. But when it does work, it's so effective and so exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Ollie's goal, brilliant, and it's a bit like the couple that he scored the other night, where he just looks like he's thinking less and shooting more and just playing a bit more instinctively, and it's rewarded him with some big goals at big moments. And there's nothing bigger than tying the game and sending it to overtime like he did on Wednesday night. So no, I'm really pleased to see, especially in his testimonial year with his testimonial coming up in a few weeks and ticket sales going well, that he's found his shooting boots. And yeah, clutch goal like that, you coming from a Brit, it's brilliant, fantastic.
Jono, kind of touch on that a bit more as well. Then, Chris, we will come to you for some stats. But, you know, I don't have the breakdown of what Ollie's third period minutes were. But Danny admitted in his post-match interview he sort of cut the line slightly, which were obvious. But, you know, for Ollie, you know, because so Ollie hadn't been on the ice a lot. But obviously, you know, Danny said he was fresh when he got out there. But fair play to Ollie. You know, you haven't been on the ice a lot in the third period, and to come on the ice and produce such a big moment.
Yeah, just looking at the stats, he got 7 minutes 58 seconds in the game, but I couldn't tell you how that was split over the period. But yeah, it was just an instinctive strike from Ollie, and the puck was really bobbling around at the top of the crease, and it just landed on his stick. He turned, fired, and like Ken said, he didn't think about it. He just shot on instinct. And it went straight into the net. Brilliant goal, 2-2. So yeah, I think Ken's absolutely right. It was just an instinctive strike, where a strike, more or less a striker's goal, if to use a football parlance. And he just hit it, and it went in. Just a great way for him to bring the game level. And it's always nice to see the local guys like coming up big.
Absolutely. So Chris, onto these stats now. I'll explain the table. So just again, just to clarify for people, Group A is actually now sorted. Sheffield are going to win the group and they're going to have a home semi-final. Coventry Blaze have finished second. Nottingham Panthers will play in what's called the elimination game, and they will play the team in second in Group B. Currently, that is the Belfast Giants. Why it's a bit lopsided is because there's six teams in our group and only four teams in the other group. In the other group, they play 12 times in their group stages, effectively playing each other twice at home, twice away. Dundee atop, 9 games played, 13 points. Belfast have played a game more, also 13 points. I do note that they have more regulation wins, so that tiebreaker there would go in their favour probably if they actually end up level. Glasgow have more games in hand than the rest of them because they've only played 7 in the cup and they have 8 points. Fife are out of contention now because they have 8 points from 10 matches. So as it stands, Panthers would obviously play Belfast Giants at home because of that, you know, win percentage. But there's more games for Belfast than Dundee. Chris Gadsby, look, who is it likely, Pam? Who do you think it's likely Panthers will play, perhaps? And would it be home or away? I mean, I'm asking you to clutch at straws, but, you know, what do you reckon is the most likely scenario with the games remaining?
Yeah, this is going to be clearer after the weekend. There's a couple of games this weekend, particularly for Glasgow, one of them tonight against Fife. I bet Ken's forgotten his predictions again. But yes, he has. I can see his facial expression. But yeah, the way that obviously it works is it's done on win percentage as well. So Panthers have a win percentage of 60%. And it's the team with the higher win percentage that will host the play-in game. Jono, if I'm saying something you disagree with, please jump in, but
No,
that's
I
my
absolutely
understanding.
fine by me so far.
So to get a 60% win percentage, a team in Group B would have to win 7.2 games, so 8 games. Belfast can now only win 7 games, which means if Belfast finished second, they will be travelling to Nottingham. They cannot get a win percentage higher than Panthers. Because Jono's face is
I'm sorry
checking
though.
my maths, John.
Keep going. I'm just gonna double check
Now,
that.
Glasgow have got 4 wins so far with 5 games to go. So they would need to win 4 out of the last 5. Dundee have got 6 wins with 3 games to go. So they would need to win 2 out of the last 3. It looks maybe likely that Panthers will host, but we won't know. And obviously, until later on, let's say there's 2 games for Glasgow this weekend. It'll be a couple of weeks until we properly know. Given that how many games Belfast have played more than the rest, to me, I think Belfast are going to be coming to Nottingham for a one-off.
So are you saying you think Glasgow will end up missing out?
I really don't know, but obviously they've got 3 games in hand, but they're 5 points behind Belfast, so they've got to win all of them to catch them. And obviously they play Belfast tomorrow. That's going to be a huge game
But
in that group.
you can't write off Corey Nielsen at the cup.
Fair point, Ken.
That is a very fair point. But that is going to be a huge game tomorrow because it could almost eliminate Glasgow if Belfast were to beat them.
Well, hang
Dundee, I
on,
think, are in.
Ken. Sorry, Chris. So the remaining games for the clan tonight: Glasgow against Fife. You assume Glasgow will win, not a given. As you say, the big one in Belfast. Then Glasgow have to go to Fife. Then they have to host Dundee. Then they have to go to Dundee. So you're right. If
You
Belfast.
also have to play in Belfast as well as part of their remaining games.
But once let's say Belfast beat the Clan and move on to 15 points, Clan then only have 4 games left, and they are how many points behind? 8 points behind. No, 7 points behind. So yes, it's a lot of work for Clan to do. But if Clan go perfect, and there's no saying that they are beginning to find form, if Clan go perfect, they could yet pinch that spot off after Giants or Stars, couldn't they?
Yeah, don't forget as well that Belfast has still got to host Dundee. So that is a game where one of those sides are guaranteed to get 2 points.
Yeah, good
Don't
point.
know which one, but one of those sides is guaranteed to get at least another 2 points.
So, in summary, we don't know, but the
We don't
smart
know.
money.
I think it's going to be Belfast, personally.
Jono, do you agree with that?
I think a lot rides on that Belfast Dundee game, and I think it is in Belfast as well. I think if Belfast win that, that will probably put them as favourites to finish top of the group, which means that then Dundee fall into second, and then that depends on their final two games. And
But that.
they've already won six though, Dundee. So if they win their last two, they're going to have won eight. And lose to Belfast, and if they lose to Belfast, so
Now that
this,
Belfast Dundee game is the final group game as well.
yeah. So I mean, it could all come down to that. Which, knowing British hockey, that's more than likely what will happen.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Anyway, we know we're in the elimination game. We don't yet know any more details than that, but it's exciting to wait to find out. Let's have a look towards the weekend. Ken, we've talked about Cardiff a lot, haven't we? And we talked about, I think we all at the start of the season wondered whether they might be a bit outside of the chasing pack. And then I think we kind of all held our hands up because they had a very good start. And then we all started to say, maybe, perhaps they weren't given as much credit. I did see a few Cardiff fans actually, regular posters, retweeting a few tweets and kind of stuffing it in people's faces, which was fair enough. But we all said, never write off a Tomo team. And I think Ken's frozen. Ken, can you hear us or not? No. Oh,
Yeah,
yes,
and I can hear you.
he can hear us. So my question to you is about, Cardiff. They're going to be smarting that they've not reached the next round of the Challenge Cup. Tomo's a very proud man. Tomo's a very good coach. We're going to be going to a very motivated Cardiff team. We're banging form right now, and we're full of confidence. But that place is going to be a tough place to go, isn't it, on Saturday?
Yeah, I think anytime you go to Cardiff, it's a tough place to go and play in. The support there is very vocal. They've turned it into an intimidating building to go and play in. And it really, for me, it depends on what Cardiff side we end up playing and how they approach the game. Because I felt that in games where they've been more physical, we've benefited from that, and actually we've found a way to play against them. I think in the times where we've maybe lost it in the final period, or we've lost against Cardiff, it does seem to be that it's where they've kind of taken some of the physicality out, and then almost we've kind of not reacted to the fact they started playing hockey, and they've just pinched it at the end. And I think there's always that balance as well between how they're going to play. And I've seen some comments from their own fans, and people making comment around, it's they're lacking goals in the side at the moment. And we'll have had conversations about that previous Panthers teams. And you get one element right, then you're missing other elements. And it is that point of where you get your goals right. My personal view is if our goal scorers turn up, and we carry the depth of scoring into that game. It's a road game. Our road form's been pretty good. The last time we went there, good result. And I think it's a winnable game, but it's going to be a tough game. So I think it all depends, whether we get going early and we run up a big score. I think if we score upwards of three goals, we should have a good chance at winning that game.
Yeah,
Who
I mean,
knows? Like you say, they're going to be smarting over the situation, the fact that they've their next game in the Challenge, because they've got a game to play in the Challenge Cup. And it's their
oh, they
brother,
have
isn't it?
against Guildford, haven't they? Yeah,
So
absolutely. Well, you kind of segue nice about scoring three goals. You expect to win the game, which brings us on to the question. I'll touch it on both of you, Chris and Jono. Obviously, right now, with the form of both netminders, I really can't call who the coaches will go with on Saturday, because you look at the breakdown, both goalies have got shutouts recently, and when they haven't got shutouts, they've been impressive. I mean, Kevin Carr only let a couple in his last game. So what are we going back? So we go back to the trip to Dundee. Carsey's in goal for that one, isn't he? And we let in two. Home game against Dundee, only let in three. I mean, he was left high and dry, wasn't he, for one of them, a 2-on-1 break. That was Grande, by the way. So Carsey lets in two on Saturday. Grande lets in three on Sunday, but still makes some big saves. Just two for Carsey letting on Wednesday. Start with you, Chris Gadsby. I mean, and obviously both have been getting shutouts before that. Last Wednesday, we go back to when Grande got a shutout against Fife.
five.
We look at Cardiff last time we were there. Carr got a shutout in a 5-0 win. It's a good option to have right now, because equally, I think both in the past 2 or 3 weeks are putting their hands up now saying, start me, start me.
Yeah, I really don't know which way they will go. I think the advantage that Panthers have is I don't think it really matters which way they go, in the form that both netminders are in. Both give Panthers a fabulous chance of winning the game. It's great for the back end that we've got too. I think the Dundee weekend is testament to that, where they can go, okay, one will travel, one can stay at home. We don't have a one and a two. It's a 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it. And they knew that they could leave Jason Grande at home for the first one, and keep him fresh, knowing that they would get a good result, or at least a good performance out of Kevin Carr as well. So I think it is so difficult. I honestly, every week when the lineup comes out, I don't know which netminder it's going to be. And I think that's a real strength that Panthers have got this season.
I think that's a good point there about Grande being fresh. It's a long trip for a goalie to go all the way to Scotland to not play the game. Obviously, Panthers have Lucas Sheldon, but if you look at maybe the way that Cardiff will do it, they'll have Ben Bounds and then an import goalie. So the fact that we were able to, now maybe if that trip had been Coventry, both goalies might have gone, and one might have just sat in the stands. You know, who knows? But the fact that one was able just to rest was massive. And I think that's a real advantage, Jono, don't you, of having, I mean, Jason Grande. I mean, at some point, you know, you explained it really well, didn't you? Going back to this Grande Greenfield debate when you went on a podcast recently, where basically it was like, you know, the argument is like it's like both are very good netminders. Who had a better season last season? Well, it was Grande, but who's got the better CV and has been the more consistent over the years? It's Greenfield. So, you know, the argument who's better, and I do look at the debate sometimes and I think, can't both just be brilliant? And I think that's kind of what you said, Jono. And you look at that, and this season, you know, you the stats would show, certainly in the Cup, Greenfield's probably had a better start. But then if you bring in Grande's league figures in the early
They're
stages...
better than Grande's, yeah.
Grande's are better than Greenfield's, aren't they? Mm, so, yeah. You know, it's really interesting that Grande had a tough time in the Cup, but his league stats are kind of on par with last season. So what my point is, in a long-winded way, is we've got two netminders now with great stats, and both of them are shouting to be number one.
Yeah, and that's what you want. You want that battle because they'll both be pushing each other. And the more they push each other, they know the better they've got to be to try and keep their place in net. Kevin Carr was excellent on Wednesday night. Is he good? It does feel a bit harsh to sort of replace him with Grande this Saturday. But you look at Grande's figures in Elite League play, he's 92.98% with a goals against average of 1.33.
And he's won every game. He's won every game he's played in the league as well.
Yeah, he's got three wins out of three in a shutout. So, you know, looking at stats like that, it's really difficult. I wouldn't like to be in Danny's shoes having to make the decision for tomorrow.
Well, wouldn't you? It's a great decision.
I suppose it's a nice problem to have, nice problem to have.
But it's a tough one to really to go on. Do you want to join in the netminder debate, Ken? It really is. It's fascinating now that we just generally sit here and it either could start on Saturday.
I was going to say, I think that, you know, maybe you sort of in the back of your mind, you go, well, yeah, you obviously, you know, you want to go with someone who's on a hot streak or, you know, you do that. But maybe just that thing of, you know, they're both very even, both winning games for us. You just use that ability to keep rolling them through and maybe you just keep giving each one the opportunity. I think the bigger question actually, rather than who plays tomorrow night, is probably how they split the weekend next weekend when we've got two games back to back at home, because that'll be an interesting call as well, I guess. I do sort of wonder with both games at home whether that decision might come even down to the, you know, the last minute almost. You know, get both to warm up and see who they want to go with at the 11th hour. But I think for me, it's great that they've got, I mean, both Kevin Carr and Jason Grande, first and foremost, are great human beings. And I think, you know, they're humble as well. And I think they buy into the team mentality that Panthers have got. And I think that's what makes Danny Stewart's teams successful, that never say die attitude, because they do work together as a team. So I think, regardless of what happens, whether they go with Grande or whether they go with Carr, I don't think either one is going to feel their noses out of joint. I think they genuinely, in that role, they're supportive of one another and supportive of, you know, the main objective being that we get a win.
Yeah, and I think you kind of started to allude to it there, but I want to push on that point about who will play the following weekend. I think that decision, and again, we're second-guessing the coaches, you know, but I do think that, like, where is that decision, I guess, last weekend to Dundee and back was set in stone? You know, that I don't think there'll have been any chance that Kevin Carr was starting the game on Sunday. It was always going to be Jason Grande. He was rested. But with two home games, so let's just say they go with Kevin Carr on Friday. Kevin Carr has an immense game and gets a shutout. You know, you probably might want to ride the hot goalie the next night because it's not been a long travel. You know, he's just gone back to his own bed. So because it's a very different circumstance that weekend, you would, you know, after the game, let's say Panthers win 3-0, goalie has a shutout. You know, do they think, oh, we're going to keep refreshing and keep guys fresh? Or do we think, let's say Kevin Carr, could be Grande, either way, he has got a shutout. Jono, therein is suddenly a different type of decision to the one they made the weekend in Dundee.
Yeah, I think with both those games being at home, they will be game day decisions on who starts. And like you say, whoever starts on Friday against Belfast, if they have a fantastic game, then do you ride the hot goalie and leave the other one out? I think when it's two games at home, it's not too much of an issue. I think if there was a bit of travel involved, it was a home game, then maybe an away game somewhere, then maybe you look at definitely splitting the weekend between the two netminders. But I think with it being two home games, I think it's a decision that the coaching team can make on the days of the game.
And Chris, you know, it strikes me that there's going to be a decision to make soon because it's getting clear that Chase Pearson's getting closer. He's not going to be fit for this weekend, it doesn't seem. Could he be fit for next weekend? You know, let's see. You know, it next weekend does start to fall in that 4 to 6 week timeline. And that I think that 4 to 6 week timeline was best case 4, probably worst case 6. Chase Pearson, of course, came out and said, I want to be quick even sooner. So, you know, but sometime soon, you know, the coaches have got to leave a player out. And that's going to be an interesting dynamic again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is going to be really difficult. I mean, Panthers as a whole team are on such a run right now. You know, they look at, it was what, 5 wins out of the last six in the Challenge Cup. They've got 9 points out of the first 10 in the league. You're torn between, you know, getting somebody who can be as influential as Chase Pearson back in the lineup and then going with the old adage of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, because Panthers are firing well so now. But that's something that, you know, they're going to have to balance throughout the season. This is not going to be the last injury that Panthers have throughout the season. And you've got to be able to adapt and alter the lines, and the players will have to adapt to that as well. What I'll say is that it is so much, I think, easier to do that when the team is winning and the spirits are high and everybody's really enjoying their hockey. It'd be different, I think, similar maybe to the netminder situation, where if Panthers were losing all the time and let's just say Kevin Carr, for example, shipped 4 goals in a loss and then he played the next night, Jason Gronin might think, well, why aren't I in there? Whereas if you're riding a hot streak, it's much more understandable. And I think that's the same with the players. If you've got a line which is all the players are on, you know, +3, +4 a night and putting up points with a lot of consistency, it's easier, I think, to look from the outside in and go, yeah, I get why I can't really change that at the minute. So maybe has to go on a different line when he first comes back. I mean, again, this is why, you know, the Danny and Linton get paid what they do to make these tough decisions and ultimately try and get Panthers where they are now, also in April.
Yeah,
I
that's fine.
think it's interesting, but I kind of disagree a little bit with that. So I think you couldn't contemplate not having a player like Chase. If Chase Pearson's available, he's in the lineup, and he's, you know, I get you might want to ease him back into the game, but I think I couldn't envisage a scenario where that anything other than that happened. But you know, I
Oh, I'm
get where
not
you're coming from.
saying. I'm not saying don't put him back in. I'm saying he might not, like, would you put him straight back in where he was, or maybe in a slightly different position to start with if.
I think my view is like that, you know, Foss is going, that, you know, Alfie back in, that line looks pretty settled. I think, you know, do you, I guess it's the debate, do you put Pearson back with, I guess, with Marcy and Harry Hockey, or do you kind of ease him in lower down the lineup? I don't know. I just think, yeah, possibly that line with Alfie and Foss is pretty settled and Doherty. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I think he's the kind of player, he's not been out to the extent that he's not been able to kind of keep up his condition or get out on the ice and stuff like that. So I think when he comes back in, I think a couple of minutes and he should be, you know, I don't, well, I know he's not played in a competitive game, obviously, for a few games, but I don't think he's going to be that far behind where he was.
And you know what, you both make fair points. And I think what Chris was alluding to, I think you're right, Chris, you weren't saying leave him out, but what he's saying is if the lines are still firing, how does he fit in? Because not only have you got to drop a player, you've got to break up a trio, and the four trios at the moment are pretty consistent on any given night. I mean, if you look down the stats at the moment, one, and I'm not going to say like top, second, third line, because it just seems a bit disrespectful, but there's a night when Ollie Betteridge got a couple of goals and that line was firing. There was a night, of course, when Ross Armour got two goals and that line is firing. Players like Harry Hockey and Marcinou, Foss and Alfie and Doherty and Vulcan are beginning to kind of constantly drop in points. So again, just finally to you, Jono, as you said, you've loved having him in the commentary box, giving a great insight. But the roster is going to have to change, no matter whether you put him. No matter whether you put him on Foss's line and move another player somewhere else, or drop him in on another line, it's gonna change, and it's gonna be fascinating to see how Danny Stewart does that.
It certainly is, because the big decision for Danny Stewart is who does he leave out, and that's a huge decision because they're all playing well at the minute. It would be quite harsh to leave anyone out the way they're playing at the moment. But you, Chase Pearson is a high quality, high impact player. So if he's fit, I feel you have to bring him back into the team as soon as he's ready, because he's one of those players that can change a game for you. He's one of those players that you can build a team around, build a line around. So I think as soon as he's fit, he has to come back in. And you could tell, Wednesday night particularly, you could tell he was itching to be out there. He just really you could see he really wanted to be out there. I could sense the frustration coming from him as the game went on. So yeah, I think a lot depends on who he leaves out. I think bringing Chase Pearson back in is the easy decision. The hard decision for Danny Stewart is who has to make way for him.
Yeah, that sums it up really well. Like, Chase is back in the lineup, but who? Yeah, that's actually a great way of putting it. Chase comes in, but which one of those, nine? No, yeah, nine forwards does he leave out? But it's a good decision that the coaches have to make. They might, might be a head scratcher, but they'll certainly have, be happy to be in that position, because it means that, people are contributing. Maybe they'll already know. Maybe the next few games, whenever he's back, maybe guys are playing, for that spot. Only the coaches will know that. Guys, that was a great chat. Thank you for taking up a bit of your Friday night as we look ahead to the weekend. Cardiff, of course, on Saturday on the road, 7 o'clock face off in Wales. And then don't forget, next weekend, a week on Friday, it's Belfast at home at 7 o'clock, earlier time now, of course, on a Friday. And then Saturday at 7 o'clock against Coventry Blaze. Individual tickets available, but also a bundle available. If you want to come to both games, I haven't got your tickets, a discounted bundle, taking advantage if you book at the same time. But for now, TSGG, Jono and Kem, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll see you on I guess, probably next week in a pre-game podcast, or if not, then, of course, in the post-game podcast as well. But for now, thanks for joining us.